Hello, and welcome to Clinical Nutrition Notes, a podcast where we speak with guest experts and opinion leaders about the art and science of clinical nutrition, brought to you by Nestle Health Science Canada. This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals for education purposes. I'm your host, Lauren Murch, Medical Affairs Manager with Nestle Health Science, and today I'm joined by JB Podolak. JB is a dietitian who's been working in the community in Ontario for over 35 years. Amongst her many accomplishments, JB worked with dietitians and nurses from the Hamilton area hospitals to develop a booklet on managing cheap feeds in the home. Additionally, she's held positions such as nutrition supervisor, manager, and director of operations for therapies. However, she decided she loves the hands-on approach to clinical care and returned as a community-registered dietitian providing one-on-one care to both adults and pediatrics in the Hamilton and Niagara regions of Ontario. So, welcome, JB.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you very much for inviting me to do this podcast with you.
Thank you. Today, we'll be talking about home enteral nutrition and specifically some of the issues that arise with managing enteral nutrition intolerance in this unique patient population. Prevalence of enteral nutrition intolerance was reported by dietitians at 66% in the home care setting in a 2017 study, and a 2021 study by Campos and colleagues showed that complications including enteral nutrition intolerance may decrease quality of life in home enteral nutrition patients. And to me, this really highlights the importance of this topic in the home care setting. A recent paper from 2021 by Blazer and colleagues talked about definitions of enteral nutrition intolerance, and they showed that the definition of intolerance really varies across care settings and between peds and adults. So, JB, I'd love to hear from you. From your perspective, how do you define or describe enteral nutrition intolerance?
Well, Lauren, I would define and describe intolerance simply as when things don't seem right and clients are not happy in experiencing what they felt they should in an enteral feed. This can include things such as the GI issues, such as nausea, vomiting, constipation, diarrhea, cramping, and bloating. However, I would also include things such as fever, thirst, weight gain or loss, tube leakage, and even equipment issues.
Thanks. That sounds like a really holistic approach and focused on many issues that impact patient experience. So let's take that one step further. What is the impact of enteral nutrition intolerance on patients who are receiving enteral nutrition at home?
Well, I really feel that the impact is actually threefold. It's not just for the client, but it's also for the caregiver and as well as the clinician or the dietitian. For the client, it mainly affects their quality of life and mental health. They don't go out. They feel frustrated. They can also lose motivation as they may lose weight and they can't get the calories or the protein for their nutritional health. For the caregivers, they also have a feeling of helplessness. They're there to be able to help their loved one being able to become better. And if there's intolerances going on, they may feel inadequate and that some of it can be their fault. For the dietitian or clinician, the intolerances can result in the clinician spending more time with the clients to provide support and trying to find out what the root cause is. We can also feel frustrated as we have to navigate the healthcare system. We have to call physicians and pharmacists, and in a time that we're pulled in all directions, we may not have the time and resources we would like to spend with each client. And the client may also lose confidence in our skills, which is important because it will affect our relationship with them and if we're not able to resolve the intolerance.
Thanks, JB. That really is a good way to look at it from all those different lenses. And I think it really highlights the importance of discussing enteral nutrition intolerance, since it can have impact on not only the patients, but also their caregivers and the healthcare professionals involved in their care. So what are some of the unique challenges in the home setting compared to being in the hospital when you think about managing enteral nutrition intolerance?
So when I think of those challenges or in the home care setting, I would first of all, again, look at the time. So we're often in the home by ourselves, and we have to think many times outside the box, as we have to be the dietitian, the nurse, the doctor, the pharmacist, social worker, and even MacGyver sometimes in terms of how we have to help the client. And these personnel are not always available, yet we have to also work within our own professional guidelines to be able to not overstep our professional expertise. Resolution as well for these intolerances can take more time when the client is in their home, is in the hospital, because they're just not down the hallway. And sometimes it will take time for us to be able to call the doctor, to ask for x-rays if we query tube placements, to ask for testing if we think the diarrhea could be C. diff. And so that, again, causes us to more challenges than in the hospital. And if we also think that it's pump-related as opposed to gravity, if you're on a gravity feed and we want to order a pump, again, it may take up to 24 hours for that pump to be sent to the client's home, and then they be taught, which again can make more time for the client to resolve that intolerance. The second challenge, I would say, is the home environment. As you know, some of the homes we go into are not always the cleanliness, and if the client is not have good running water, they can't change the, they have to change the bags, they have to clean the bags. And in the hospital, they're able to change the bags daily, and we have to reuse them. And so infestations of bugs, all those types of things may cause more challenges in the home environment that we have to deal with. And then the last thing I would suggest is the communication part, is that, again, the person in the home may not speak English, and or English is not their first language. We have to try to get them to understand what we're trying to say. We have to follow through with getting interpreters. And I know there's also language lines, but that can also be a challenge for us in the community.
Yeah, so lots and lots to consider within the themes of time, home environment, and communication as aspects that can be quite unique in the home care setting and a little bit more challenging to navigate. You mentioned earlier you have what I'd consider a fairly comprehensive definition of enteral nutrition intolerance, which may include GI symptoms as well as a number of other things. So let's talk a little bit more in detail specifically about addressing GI symptoms of enteral nutrition intolerance. And in a recent practice survey of Canadian dietitians published in NCP in 2023 by Steele and Weil, dietitians said when managing GI symptoms of enteral nutrition intolerance, the first three strategies they considered were change of infusion of enteral nutrition or volume delivered, elevating the head of the bed, or assessing medications. And in fact, changing the enteral nutrition formula followed only by stopping the enteral nutrition formula altogether were the last strategies considered by home care dietitians surveyed. How did these management strategies for GI symptoms of enteral nutrition intolerance in this practice survey compared to what you have experienced in your practice? And what are some of the things you consider when deciding what strategies to try first?
Well, Lauren, in reviewing the practice survey's results, I would also agree with the other factors besides changing formula. The top three you mentioned, change rate and volume, head raising, and medication review would be my top three. I would also include venting of the tube and having the clients maybe lying on their left side, nauseated or experiencing heartburn. And some of the other factors I would consider when determining what strategy to use is how long has the intolerance been going on? How long have they been on the enteral feeds and what type of formula they have tried in the past? Their type of intolerance, if it's cramping or diarrhea, constipation, bloating, etc. And also their administration setup, including the environmental issue. And then as well, I feel diagnosis and prognosis is also a factor.
I think that makes sense. You want to kind of clear out the low-hanging fruit first and look for some obvious issues that can be resolved before moving on to other things. Can you elaborate a little bit more on how your management approach might differ depending on the type of gastrointestinal symptom you are seeing?
Well, if it was nausea or vomiting, I would, again, like the literature had stated, I would look at the rate flow, I would hold the feed for an hour. I would also check the residuals of the client if they're finding they're not emptying their stomach faster than they should be, and the meds as well as anti-nausea or motility agents I would review. If it was something like constipation, I would look at the fiber content. Most of the things that have been actually addressed in the literature as well, and look at if they were fiber content, the, how much water they're having. I would actually add prune juice to their feeding in order to see if that will help, if some of the other medications are not working. And if it's diarrhea, see if they're actually on anti-diarrhea medication. Check the positioning of the tube and making sure the environment is good to make sure if it's cleanliness, washing of their hands, things like that.
And really what I think that does is like it highlights again, like the problem solving that you have to do and thinking on your toes when you're in somebody's home to figure out what could be the culprit behind the symptoms that you're seeing. So you also mentioned that the length of time the intolerance has been occurring is important to you. And I would imagine there are some patients that don't have the luxury of time to do a lot of investigations. Are there times that you will consider fast tracking through any of the investigations and changing the formula just because you have experience with similar patients with similar histories, or you really have a hunch that the formula might be a tool in your toolbox that you might use to address what you're seeing?
Yes. So when I mean by time, if the intolerance, first of all, is recent, like 1 to 2 days, then I would look at the strategies that we talked about recently. However, if it's been going on for at least a week, then I would actually look at changing the formula, especially if the diagnosis is one of a neurological issue or if they are palliative, because I do feel that their digestive systems can change at that point in time, and I want to make sure that their quality of life does improve quickly as opposed to waiting too long.
I think that absolutely makes sense. Like you're looking at the underlying mechanisms that could be at play to guide your decision making and change what you would otherwise do. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And when you do change the formula, what are some of the formula characteristics you consider and why?
So quite a few answers for that, or quite a few suggestions. So first of all, I would look at the fiber content. And, you know, there are many of the formulas that we use that have fiber and some do not. So I would look to see if the solutions or the formulas that they're using have insoluble and soluble fiber. I might add more fluids to the client's regime if tolerated. And then I would also, but I also believe in real food ingredients, and I would choose or try a formula that has real food ingredients if they're able to tolerate it. The second thing I would look at actually is the protein source. It, look at a wave-based protein or semi-elemental formula, especially as I had mentioned before, the client's diagnosis is more neurological or end-stage cancer as palliative because of their GI systems may deteriorate. And some people don't look at this part, but I would look at more powder and versus liquid. I know that's not always possible, but I find that many of my clients may not have the ability or the environment to use dry formulas that need to be reconstituted. This does not include the modular formulas I'm talking about. I'm talking about complete powder formulas. And I would try to see if I could find a liquid one that would be more appropriate. I did have a young woman, for an example, who was on a powder formula, who was going to university, and she was finding it difficult to make up her formula as the hang time was an issue. And even if she brought the water with her, she was finding it difficult to make up the formula in a clean environment. And it resulted in her missing classes and having to leave. And I think that the liquid formula she could have tolerated would have been more convenient for her. And then as the literature also stated, I would look at the density of the formula. If the client is volume sensitive, then I would look at formula that is more calorie dense, even though it may cause other intolerances such as fullness, and then I would look to see if they were eligible to have a motility medication. And then the last thing I would look at is coverage. Many of my clients can't afford to purchase their formula, and I know that many provinces besides Ontario have provincial drug reimbursement lists that can change from province to province, but I would only use formulas that have been approved for coverage under the Ontario Drug Benefit Program, in order for them not to be financially strapped on a tube feed or enteral feed.
Thanks, JB. It sounds like you're juggling a lot of different factors to again, come up with a bit of an individualized approach for what might work best for that specific patient. And I think we discussed some of the challenges in addressing enteral nutrition intolerance in the home care practice setting and how that relates to different management strategies you might consider. And we started off this entire conversation talking about the impact of enteral nutrition intolerance on patients. So I have one last question before we close. I was wondering if you would be able to share an example of effective management of enteral nutrition intolerance making a meaningful difference to your patients.
So one of my more recent examples, Lauren, that comes to mind, is a 74-year-old woman with many complications. She was NPO. She had a G-tube. She was ventilator dependent. She had renal issues, and she was volume sensitive. She was presently on a 2-cal per mil formula, renal formula, and at a slower rate that she was having during the daytime, as she did not want to have nightly feeds. And her main intolerance was severe bloating and weight gain. And the nurses were seeing her daily and were venting her almost 400 milliliters of air from her abdomen daily. And so the nurses and myself tried to investigate what we can do to try to help with that. So the first thing we did was we did a GI consult to ensure that there was no other issues causing severe bloating, such as tube placement or even bacteria overgrowth. We then checked her ventilator to ensure that no air was going into her stomach and that was all working properly. Then we also investigated and reviewed all of her medications in her bowel routine, and that was all working well. So after all of those things were investigated and ruled out, the formula was changed. So we ended up changing her to a less dense formula, semi-elemental formula with whey protein. We reduced her calories, and so now her weight had become stable. And her gas really decreased, but unfortunately her magnesium levels did increase, and so we had to think of another way to be able to help all of her issues. So we went back to her 2 cal per mil renal formula. However, we decreased it by half, and the other half was the whey formula. And so presently, she's managing well, her magnesium levels are normal, and her gas and bloating have decreased. And I feel that one of the advantages in working at home care in our toolbox includes all formulas. And that was why for her, we were able to mix and match, and her goal outcomes and her quality of life did improve. And I think that sometimes in the hospital setting, they're not always able to mix and match. And I think that is one of the advantages of working at home care.
That's a great example. Thank you so much for sharing. And I love how you said you worked together with the nurses and maybe even doing some visits together with the nurses, and also how the home care setting presents a number of unique challenges. But on the flip side of that, you have the ability to leverage some creative problem solving when presented with such complex cases. And I love the personalized approach to meeting this patient's needs by mixing the formulas, and I'm glad to hear that it's working so well. This concludes this episode of the Clinical Nutrition Notes podcast. To listen to more podcasts or to subscribe to Clinical Nutrition Notes, visit our website, Nestle Health Science for Healthcare Professionals, at www.nhsc-pro.ca.